When you come in on Monday and you're not feeling real well, does anyone ever say to you, sounds like someone has a case of the Mondays?
No. No, man. No, man. I believe you get your ass kicked saying something like that, man.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah, what condition my condition was in.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money,
head? It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
Found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Lone Horn Bank's Action Jacks. I'm coming out with Greg Pappas on the board. S&P futures down 45, NASDAQ futures down 184. That's not a great start to the week. We also have the big news that Pope Francis is dead after a huge stay in the hospital and was fighting his way back and actually making a public appearance yesterday. Not so good. I always thought he was pretty respectable. I mean, like a very... Mr. Murphy, how are you, buddy?
Good morning, Tom. How are you today?
I'm all right, except market's down, the Pope's dead. What the hell?
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I guess he wasn't as well as they kept saying, so who knows?
Or maybe he wanted to make it to Easter.
Yeah, you're right about that.
I think the guy had a pretty serious internal fortitude. Some of those guys are pretty, he's been sick for a long time, man, and he didn't really let it slow him down. I thought he was pretty much a breath of fresh air. I don't know what you thought, but...
No, I agree with you. And he was the first Jesuit, not the first, maybe, but the first Jesuit in a long time, so that was interesting, too.
Yeah, and from South America. I wonder where the next one will be from. I really thought that the guy here from Chicago, if he didn't get the cancer... might have been on somewhat of that track. Cardinal Bernard, I thought he was pretty special, too. Unfortunately, died young. Mike, we're going to let, since gold is up $75, we're going to give Greg the floor here for a few minutes. He sent me this thing on, I don't know if you got it, this thing on shadow gold versus regular gold, and I didn't really have a chance to go through it this weekend. But, Greg, what's going on with gold? It's up another $75. It seems to run every day now. Some of it has to do with the dollar going down, but how about explaining the thing about the shadow gold real quick, then Mike and I will get into some sports.
Yeah, well, obviously there's a lot of inflation concerns, and what's happening, what's happening is you're seeing gold prices start to run up, and that's more related to what you call, or what other people call, shadow finance, meaning there's a lot more money out there than we really think, and it's talking about the banking system and all the money that's kind of sloshing around in leverage trades, as well as hedge funds and money markets and stuff that's outside of traditional banking regulations. So the gold price, they take that total number. I mean, what I sent you was M2 divided by the total stock of gold.
Okay.
But you know, that total number is a lot bigger when you include the non-traditional banking system, and you'll see it diverge from regular. And now with the dollar kind of weakening a little bit, the gold, since it's priced in dollars, is actually rallying more. So in my opinion, you'll see more of a correlation between the shadow gold price and the inflation than the regular call it CME futures price.
Greg, sometimes people when it's this money, you use the term sloshing around, it's not necessarily counted, although the Fed's supposed to be keeping an eye on it. They'd have access to where every dollar is, where all the other stuff is. People just like lose money there. It's not like it's not gone. I mean, if somebody had
so for instance, it's something like a trading firm or a hedge fund that's outside of the traditional banking, right? They have loans, they have lines of credit, they have ways in order to put on leverage in trades, and they use bond funds, money market funds, and different types of companies to really gain more leverage. And at least what happened with the bond market in the past week and a half or 2 weeks was those trades that they were highly leveraged in, called the bond basis trade and others like it, were deleveraged. So those loans with the various hedge funds and those trades that were put on were margin called essentially off. And so that's why you saw the big disruptions in the bond markets, because those agreements, those loans, and whatever else allowed those firms to put on those trades were taken away.
So you're saying these are like guarantees that are not necessarily fungible, but they're leverage guarantees of some kind, and all of a sudden they blow up. It's not like there's going to be a monetary result at some place somewhere at some point, right?
Yeah, because those trades are in the lit markets, you know, those are for everyone to see, and they're cleared with the regular methods, and it's in a good way, you know, it's more being done on private balance sheets rather than public like we had in 2008.
But if you get, sorry, Mike, I hope you're following, but if you have even a margin loan, something that, well, we sure could deal with here at PTI because we have that capability, being a full service firm and stuff, but we don't normally get the client who's out on a limb margin wise. I mean, we're really not the place where somebody wants to buy, you know, 1,000 shares of Disney of $85, you know, sends us a check for $42.5. We don't get that client. That's the Robin Hood, the E-Trade.
Right.
I mean, those guys get that. But if the leverage falls apart, or the leverage, you can find it if you look, you know, the total margin loans. But if there's a margin call, the person has to send us or whoever it is a check. Now that check, that money comes out of the bank account, all right, and goes into to pay off whoever the firm is on this loan. So the fact that it comes out of a bank account will lower the money supply, correct?
Yeah, yeah. And people ask, you know, is this legal? You know, are these things regulated? And the answer is yes. Everything's legal. Everything's regulated. The thing is, they're not insured.
Well,
so
and also
deposits are.
And I'm not going to go into it today, but one of these days, maybe we'll, maybe Thursday or something, we'll go. You know, and Mike knows a lot of this because I went to class with the guy for monetary theory and stuff. It's we our system allows individual people and banks to essentially create money. If you can create it, you can lose it, because if you start paying back loans, you essentially drop the money supply, right?
Right.
Same as taking a loan and putting the money in a bank increases the money supply. So anyway, enough with that. The reason why I asked Mike on, A, is he hasn't been on for a while, and actually want to talk maybe a little bit of, it seems like the place that hasn't gotten the sweeping, and I'll use the term changes, by the current administration, has been the Defense Department. I have a feeling you're going to be on one day for that, Mike, but I mean, this weekend it was the State Department. But anyway, we want to talk a little bit about some sports. It's kind of an odd day to do it, but we'll do a little bit of it. The thing that kind of moved this forward was one of, I don't think he was our year, Mike. I think he was the year behind us. A gentleman in Notre Dame, Eric Penick, died over the weekend. And he had the huge run in the 1973 game against Southern Cal. This is back when Southern Cal was admittedly cheating and got the death penalty for a while. They didn't get the death penalty, but they couldn't be on TV and other stuff, and they had, like, a real team. Back before any of the stuff at NIL, didn't John McKay, nobody came through the admissions department ever, John, or Mike on the football team and so forth. But for Notre Dame to beat them was a big deal, because they were about the closest thing to a current team as there was, wouldn't you say?
Oh, I don't know, Tom. We were always pretty competitive with them. With when Joe Theismann, well, I don't know whether he ever beat them, but he probably did. But I mean, he went out there that one year and they lost in that big rainstorm, whatever it was. There was a lot of scoring done, but Notre Dame did end up losing that game. So,
well, in McKay's tenure of 10 years, I think they were 8-2 against the Irish.
Yeah, that's about right.
So they won our
senior
year. We
always did terrible against them, right?
Well, they had guys. I mean, they had some serious guys. I mean,
Anthony Davis. That time we were up 24-0, and then we ended up losing the game. So,
well, before our time, they had OJ.
Right.
OJ wasn't exactly a student.
Well, yeah, that's true. I guess McKay started the Pete Carroll way to academics, I guess. Who knows?
Well, but O.J. never even graduated junior college.
Well, Jim Brown never graduated either, Tom. And from Syracuse, he got a certificate of attendance. So,
well, that's good. You were there.
Yeah.
God. But I think O.J., the only thing he ever graduated from was the high school, right? He played – He went to some high school in San Francisco, and then he went to San Francisco Junior College, and he didn't graduate there. He was running track his second year for Southern Cal in the spring, and then was playing halfback that fall, right?
Yeah, that's about right.
Who was the guy on? The guy just died. When I say just died, a few years ago, he was a guy who played for the high school, college. In San Francisco 49ers, he played every home game of his entire football career in Kezar Stadium.
Oh, I have no idea, Tom.
He was an Hall of Fame linebacker. But anyway, what Mike and I were talking about is how sometimes a few people, and you know, those of you that have played a lot of sports kind of understand this. People who have never played a lot of sports have no friggin' clue about how individual people with certain talents really help a team. Because any kind of team sport, anybody who's, I'll use the term, difference maker, and it may not even be anybody you ever heard of or Hall of Fame person. It could be some, you know, guy that the Cubs bring up that all of a sudden, you know, can't hit his way out of a paper bag, and yet all of a sudden the guy's a terrific center fielder. I'm not talking about Pete Kroger. I think he can hit too. All of a sudden it means, you know, your left field and your right fielder get a little better. There's two or three balls a week that don't hit the ground, and when you're that close to other teams, it makes that much of a difference. I mean, I know, to give a quick softball example, we won a league, a fall league out in LaGrange against some really, really good teams, because they weren't as good as Lettuce or the Bobcats or anybody, but they were really good teams. Summer teams, their best players would get on this fall team, and we went out and we won this league. It was a doubleheader league, and the reason why, we always had a really good neighborhood team. Chicago had a lot of those with some good guys on them, but all of a sudden for this team, we were on a trading floor, I picked up a couple guys that were difference makers, and everybody else was very competent. But all of a sudden we had a guy playing short center, Mike, that was a starting tackle for Illinois, like 6'6", could run like the wind, and he had lost some weight, and he got a hit at the ball, but it's at short center, I mean, he looked like a tree out there. And we could move our shortstop and our second baseman move over because he'd go get the ball. And Dr. J's cousin, Danny McCower, played left field. And Danny used to go out for the Twins every year. And one year, I'm thinking, they told me he'd go to AAA or something. And he said no. But he left field, I mean, he was a difference maker. Where all of a sudden, we had a couple guys that were just above the fray. And even everybody else was competent, and everybody else could do what they were doing. And all of a sudden, it makes an incredible difference. And Mike, in my senior year, the Irish essentially got tired of getting their ass kicked by Southern Cal. Is that a fair term? And Eric Garcia again went to Hesburgh, and he said, can we lighten up the admission requirements like just a little? And Hesburgh said, okay. I think that was the story, Mike. And we ended up with five freshmen. And those freshmen were like men among boys. I don't know where the hell Eric got them, but it was Ross Browner and Willie Fry and Luther Bradley. A couple of them had terrific NFL careers. They all hunted. I forget who the fifth guy was. He didn't play much. And all of a sudden, we win a national championship after losing the year before in a bowl game, disgustingly, to Nebraska, where we didn't even belong on the same field. All of a sudden, we get these. Well, I was there. I mean, it was horrible.
Yeah, you and I both were there.
Yeah, we drove down. And plus, didn't we have the worst seats ever? The We
I don't remember, Tom. I just know we got our asses kicked. That's all.
Well, remember, we were in it was the old Orange Bowl, which is a horrible place, and we were like the second row bleacher in the end zone where you couldn't even see. And all you could see was Johnny Rogers' number going back and forth, up and down the field for Nebraska.
Right.
And we got our ass kicked. And it was like, what do we even belong? We didn't belong there. All of a sudden, we get these five guys, and the world changed. Not that the rest of the team wasn't good. They were very good, very competent, but all of a sudden we had, I would say, Ross Browner, Willie Fry, and Luther Bradley had to be the three biggest freshman difference makers in any team I've ever seen. Would you say?
They certainly were.
And I don't know, it wasn't before payment, it wasn't before that stuff. I don't know if they would have made the normal admissions requirement. I think they all graduated, though, didn't they? I think
so, too, yeah.
So, you know, you talk today about this NIL, you know, why you want people like that, because this is so even across the board that one or two people, certainly in basketball, make all the difference in the world, right?
That's very true.
What do you make all this that's going on in the last, I don't know if you heard the other day, Kevin said, what, 30 or 40%, was it that high, 25 somewhere in there, of all women are in the portal?
Oh, yeah, I don't know, Tom. It's just the portal has changed the whole aspect of college sports. It's no longer, you know, it's definitely not an amateur game now. And this kid from Tennessee, you know, he turns down, well, he tries to renegotiate a deal from $2.4 million to get it up to $4.5 million. And Tennessee tells him, not no, but hell no. You know, that really was something to me.
Well, Mike, did you happen to catch, I did not, do you happen to catch any of the details, though? Tennessee, first of all, is allegedly not supposed to be putting the deal together. Well, we know that's a bunch of hogwash, but how much of that is them going to, are they a Nike school, Adidas, or, I mean,
I have no idea what type of school they are, Tom.
Well, I mean, I would think that the big chunk of that deal is going to be with the school sponsor. Some of it might be with, you know, Auto Dealers of Tennessee. School's not ponying up. School just gives the regular stipend they give everybody, right?
I would assume, but who knows, Tom, how they're doing it now. I mean, when you got, Brady Quinn just gave $15 million to Notre Dame, and somebody else gave a lot of money. Oh, Montana gave a lot of money to Notre Dame, and I don't know what's happening at other schools, but I'm sure, like, Peyton Manning has donated money to probably Tennessee since he played there. And, you know, I don't know about Eli Manning with Mississippi, you know, but, you know, there's money coming in from all different directions with some of these programs.
If you give the money to the school, is there a separate, I've not been approached by any of this stuff. I don't know if you have. I know my buddy from Marquette has, and my buddy from Michigan has. Michigan started, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. Do you have any idea who you write the check to? You don't write it to the school general fund. Where the hell do you send it?
I don't know, Tom. I have no idea. I mean, and now we have a general manager for the college, you know, like the USC guy now came from Notre Dame, and now he recruited Urlacher's son, or Urlacher's son, and somebody else. Oliver Luck is the general manager of, or he's like the senior advisor to the athletic department at Stanford. So who knows what's going on?
Well, Mike is also our expert on how European athletics works. What, at some point here, I mean, I don't know if you've listened, but the S&P futures are now down 70, so we're leaking pretty serious even after we started the show. Somehow or another, Mike, I think this is gonna play out. I use this beat-up example, but I'll try it again. As you know, I went to business school right out of school. I mean, Mike and I have been friends forever. And it was like $3,000. So my entire University of Chicago tuition is now, I think, significantly less than one class, Mike, and you got to take 20. So that's how inflation has worked its way through the mess. And everybody, I don't know if you remember it when your first couple of jobs, because Mike went in the Army, so they didn't. But they, even so, the Army, let's put it this way, the Air Force sent Lou to Duke Law School. And Lou, I think, if you went to Academy, how long? What do you owe me afterward, Mike? Is it 6 years or something?
It used to be six. I don't know whether it still is or not. It was either five or six. So.
Well, anyway, the story with my stuff. I mean, I started at Allied Band Lines and went to Pullman, as you probably know, Mike. If Mike Murphy would have started it wherever and said he wanted to go to the University of Chicago at night, everybody would have wrote the check. There was no ifs, ands, or buts. If Mike, we like Mike, he's a good employee, you know what, $3,000 a year, the hell with it, we're writing a check. And all of a sudden, the three became four, became five, became six, became ten. And all of a sudden, the place would say, okay, Mike, you can go business school, but if you go, you owe us 2 years, or you better get
right.
Half of it back. I mean, people figured out a way to work it out.
Well, and the Army did the same thing. The Army had what was called the Fully Funded Law Education Program. It's called FLEP, was the acronym. It's probably what Lou used. The Air Force probably had something similar. And then you owed the Army more time. And I had several guys that did that, and then they would owe the Army 5 or 6 years. So, I mean, you always can figure out a way to send people to school. Well, at least the services did, because then they could extend their commitment.
Well, it was a while ago, Mike, when I used to do the stuff in New York with the CBOE, I hop in his cab, and there's this older black gentleman in the front seat, graying hair, and he says to me, where are you from? And I said, well, Chicago. He says, can you tell me who the first citizen of Chicago was? And I said, yes, I can. It would be, I know the last name is DuSable, Marv something something DuSable. Who happened to be a black guy, and he was Chicago's first official citizen. And he says to me, you're the first guy from Chicago that's ever known that. I go, really? So of course we start BSing like we're old chums, right? And the guy, he says, you know, are you sort of retired? Aren't you kind of retired? The guy's up there. He goes, oh yeah, I'm retired. And I go, oh, okay, but you look to me like you're driving the cab. He says, well, you know, I don't know about you. He says, but you know, when you retire, the wife really doesn't want you there 24/7. It's just kind of not natural. So the cab company's right down the block a couple days a week. I walk down here. She gets her stuff done. I drive around. I get to talk to people. Everybody's happy. We're happy. He says to me, he starts showing me pictures of his kids. This guy's a cab driver. I don't think in New York he could make some money. Well, one of the kids is a full-blown colonel. The daughter went to, she was like number one in some law school, Fordham or some damn place. And the youngest son is in the Army, and they were, he's doing, I don't know, whatever he was taking, but the Army wanted him, they were going to send him to med school, but they wanted another like 5 years out of him.
Right, well, that's the deal.
And so the older brother, who's at the University of Chicago, says, screw that, I'll pay for it. So he came out and he ponied up the whole med school, the other brother. And I'm thinking, God, what an unbelievable family this guy had. He must have been an incredible father. I wanted to meet the mother. And pretty interesting. But yeah, I think you're right, Mike. I think he said they owed him 5 years if they put him through med school or something.
Right.
But med school sounds like 5 years, though.
Well, I mean, it would have been after he was done.
Zero, right?
Yeah, it was after he was done. He owed him another five or something. So it would have been, what, 10, Mike, or 9 or something?
Yeah, there would have been an obligation for about 10 years at least. So.
Well, you're not serving while you're in school, right?
No, that's correct. Although you might be in the reserves, and then they bring you on active duty in the summertime or something like that. So
yeah, I would say so. But I think if everybody lets it alone, Mike, and critique me here, I think you're going to find somebody like the Big East saying, okay, we're not going to use the NCAA contract anymore. We're going to use our own. And if we recruit somebody here, you owe us 3 years, and we owe you 3 years or 4 years or something. You're going to find something like that. And I don't think every conference is going to be the same. And the NCAA's, you know, huge desire, because they make all these, they make all their money off the NCAA tournament basketball. I think they're going to just be out of luck. You're not going to have the Big East. Some of these conferences are going to find their way out of being the Mid-America Conference. I don't think it's going to be the minor leagues for Alabama and Auburn. I mean, they're going to find a way to sign contracts with people, and say, okay, we're going to bring you in here, we're going to recruit you, we're going to train you, but you owe us 4 years or three or something.
I don't know, Tom. It's too loose right now, and I just don't think that they're going to if you'll have, you know, what was, oh, St. Francis was the one that dropped down. So they went from Division One. Now they're going to be Division Three. I think you're going to see more of that schools can't afford to do the Division One thing. And then they'll just stay in a more amateur type level. So Division Three or Two, whatever.
Well, see, I don't think, Mike, this is what I want your opinion on. I don't think the NCAA right now, to me, is a total eunuch in this whole thing. I don't think they can enforce anything, but I think a conference can. A conference can say, "We're not telling you can't do it somewhere else, but not here. We're not. Miami, Ohio is not going to pay $50,000 to recruit somebody, get you your weight training guy, your dietitian, 2 years of school, only to have somebody you go play 2 years for somebody else. We're not going to do that." I think
you're probably right about that, Tom. I think they're probably just about fed up with all of this nonsense.
So I think you're going to find conference. Now, maybe the Big East says we don't even care if we're in the NCAA. At least we want our own conference back.
Right. Well, I mean, you've got, you know, the Big Five. You know, the SEC, the ACC. You know,
they're not the Big Five anymore. It doesn't appear like they have the Big Five anymore. It's the SEC. It's the SEC.
SEC and the Big Ten, you mean?
Maybe even, well, yeah, SEC and how many players, how many teams in the finals. Duke is the only one who snuck in there.
Yeah, that's true.
Football, if it wasn't for, I mean, even Notre Dame, Mike, how we're going to have people that, if you guys, your alumni got money, our alumni got money, if you guys got, you know, 8 inches hanging, we're going to have 9 inches. I mean, there's that male thing going. But at some point, when do people say, what are we doing here?
Well, I think people are already starting to say it, but, I mean, who knows, Tom? It's just college football is not going to be the same. It's never going to be the same now because of the nil. And
well, I don't think it's the nil. I think it's the idea that you can move every year. If you had to sit out a year.
Well, without the nil, you wouldn't have people moving every year. You know?
I don't know.
If kids don't get playing time, they want to go somewhere else. You know, that it's unfortunate, but that's what's happening.
Well, I guess, except I'm saying if you had to sit out a year, I'm not saying anybody should institute that. But if you did, nobody would. If you're making a million someplace and the other guy's willing to pay you two, but you can't play, I think you stay where you are for a mil, right?
Right. That's what I would do. Yeah.
How do you think this all? I mean, if you're on the board of UCLA. With an $11 billion budget, and everybody's chirping all they want.
That's where that guy went, right?
The guy from Notre Dame.
No, they're talking about him going there. I don't think that deal is finalized yet.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think it is finalized, but I don't know for sure.
I guess my question, maybe to the both of you, is what? At what point are the three of us sitting on the board of UCLA and? Guys, our budget's $11.6 billion. We got hospitals to run. We got schools to run. I am so tired of talking about some bleepity bleep high school kid making $1 billion. If you keep doing it, I'm off this board. I mean, it's chump change to an institution like that. University of Illinois, their budget's $7.8 billion. How much do you sit there talking about paying some volleyball player $50,000, for God's sake?
I think what they're worried about is losing status and reputation points. If they don't have a good team, then all of a sudden their the rest of their kind of empire seems a little suspect.
I'm totally with you, except the question I'm asking is, how far can you push that?
If it pays for itself, you can push it as far as you'd like. But I mean, if it truly is insignificant, then why not do it? Because the potential upside of having a great football team or a great basketball team is pretty high, and if it doesn't really cost them a lot, or why wouldn't you do it?
I would, Mike, as you know, I like to dig in and take the other side arguments. We've had Lou, we've had, you know, Kevin to a certain extent, not so much because Kevin's more balanced. Not saying Lou is imbalanced, but the idea that this massive amount of money flies into places if they have a football team or a basketball team. And I'm going to sort of agree that probably for your athletic department, it causes, especially if your team hasn't been good and all of a sudden is, I think you're going to get a big influx of money. I think if you separate that out, I actually was looking, maybe because Russell steered me into it, I was looking at the amount of grants the University of Indiana's gotten in the last, like, 15 years, decade or whatever. They've had their best fund rating ever, and their teams suck. You know, they're there. And none of the money's gone to the athletic department. It's gone for hospital. They've corralled a boatload of cash at Indiana for the business school and for other places. I'll bet in total it's way more than Alabama. And you know, I'm saying, I guess if you and I look at the numbers, you
well, but Indiana is becoming more competitive too, Tom. I mean, their football team last year was pretty decent.
Yeah, so. I know that. Right? What I'm saying is, people throw these numbers around, I think, without maybe looking at them. Is all I'm saying. In terms of, they said virtually all the money going to Indiana was for education. It wasn't for sports. And these guys, we're talking $15, $20 million gifts for wings on the hospitals and stuff. I mean, I just, you know, as usual, it's just the way I am. When everybody knows something the way it is, sometimes it's not the way it is, right?
Yeah, that's true. But, I mean, how much does Notre Dame get?
Well, they get.
Or what's their budget? You know, is their budget's got to be $10 billion, whatever.
Oh, no. We know, first of all, you'll never. Kevin's probably the only guy that would know, but they're not public like the other guys. They wouldn't tell you. They're nowhere near as big. They don't have hospitals and things like that.
They got all these, you know, technology centers, and, you know, I mean, they're developing South Bend.
I think it's pretty big, but. I don't think they're Wisconsin or Illinois, or certainly not UCLA.
No, that's true. That's very true. But, I mean, I'm sure that the amount of money going into some of the football players is pretty decent, you know.
Wouldn't you like to see a list of, if somebody's making, like this kid from Tennessee, wouldn't you like to see a list of who the checks are from?
Yeah, that would be interesting. Yeah.
How do you, my buddy from Michigan, who was getting... Now, that was an LLC. So, if it's an LLC, you know, my business acumen freaks in here a little bit. You can't necessarily ask the same guy for money every year. So, if the Murphy Chief Group decides to send Greg Pappas out to the auto dealer where he can make $600 or $1,000, we better be making $1,500 because we have to sustain it for next year, right? Because it's now a business. Some people were trying to, I don't know if Michigan was doing this, if you gave them money, they're going to say it was tax deductible, and we're gonna send Greg Pappas out to hospital two nights a week to talk to kids and pay them $600 an hour. That's one way of doing it. The sponsors, if it's Nike or Adidas or whatever, because who's the guy? Under Armour paid the quarterback 2 years ago, right? Was his name Hartman or something?
Sam Hartman, yeah.
Yeah, the Under Armour paid him, right? He was an Under Armour sponsor.
I don't know that for sure.
No, that definitely was him. They sponsored him, and you're seeing these kids sponsored really out of high school by some of these sponsors. When I say the sponsors, the Adidas, those kinds of people. And I have a feeling Nike's not going to pick up the young Mike Murphy, and then you're going to go to an Adidas school, I don't think. I think they're kind
of. Yeah, you're probably right about that, you know.
So there's a lot of checks flying, I guess. Hey, can you hang around a little bit after we're going to do a quick break here and bring John on? If you want to hang, because we got all this other stuff we're talking about, feel free. SP Futures now down 70. Ouch. NASDAQ Futures down 282. Gold to the moon. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right
now. Lone Wolf Bank Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Greg Pappas on the board. S&P futures down 69. NASDAQ futures down 284. Again, big news of the morning if you haven't heard. Pope Francis passed away last night. He made it to Easter. He actually made a public appearance yesterday and died last night, which is, well, I guess stuff happens. But I think he'll be missed on a huge level. They got to do a conclave just like the movie that just came out. And let's figure out who the hell gets to be the next pope. So that's what we got. Individual stocks in the Dow. We got Caterpillar down 282. We got Amgen down 4. American Express down 3. Amazon down 351. Nobody's a winner here. Goldman Sachs down 5. Of the big seven, NVIDIA is under 100, trading 98.24, down $3. And again, I can't say enough times, every time that thing's down a buck or up a buck, 25 billion shares outstanding. Meta's down 8, Apple's down 4, 192.25, so well below the 200 number. I mean, the 200 number there. So that's, boy, a lot of portfolios that I've done business with. We did some subcontract work, but that's by far their biggest holding. Anyway, that's not good for those kinds of places. The European Central Bank interest rate cut, so the stocks over there have come back a little bit. DAX down 105.5%, FTSE unchanged at 82.75, CAC around down 44.6%. We're in Asia, the Nikkei down 451.3%. Hang Seng did not trade today. The last time they traded was 417. Shanghai is up 14. Somehow they're trading, Hang Seng is not. That's 0.4%. Friday, we had sort of an inside day. Dow was down 527, but it was almost all because of United Healthcare was down like $120. So that's a lot. S&P was up 7, NASDAQ down 20. So we had a very, like I said, an inside day on Friday. Bonds up 7 basis points. That's a big move, 4.40. Bund up 2 basis points, 2.48. Japan up 1.29. Oil cannot get out of its own way at all. Maybe Greg will comment on this. Down $1.64, 63.04. Brent's down 155, 66.41. Natural gas down 6 cents, 317. Greg trades a lot of the crack spread, which is the heating oil and the gasoline RBOB versus the oil itself. He'll comment on that when he's done with traffic weather sports. Gold up $80 now, 34.08, through 3,400. Silver up 46 cents, 32.93. Copper up 5 cents, 4.79. They're to the moon. The dollar, euro is up 0.01 to 1.15. Euro was 1.08 something maybe 4 weeks ago. It's an incredible move. I mean, if you lose 5 or 6% on a currency trade, that's astounding.
How much is gold up?
Gold's up $80.
Well,
yeah, well, it'll do it.
Over the same.
Oh, since then, it's got to be up $250.
Yeah.
Easy.
Percentage
crypto up $2,200, 86,881. Just quick traffic, weather, sports, and then comment on the oil. What the hell?
Morning, everyone. It is 6:44 here in Chicago. We got 57 degrees right now. High of 58 today. Cloudy, windy, some sprinkles coming. Phoenix, 60 degrees now. High of 91 today. Traffic inbound from Montrose, 26 minutes. From Lake Cook is 38 minutes. Wolf to the interchange is 29 minutes. Dan Ryan from 95th is 26 minutes, and the inbound Stevenson from 294 to the Ryan is 24 minutes. Let's see, NBA, we have the West was 131-80. The Thunder won their first game, so that's OKC 1-0. East, Celtics beat the Magic, so that's Boston 1-0. In the, what is this?
The only non-favorite that didn't win was the Warriors.
Yeah, the Warriors won 95-85, so Golden State leads 1-0. And Cleveland beat the Heat. That was 121-100, so that was 1-0 also. White Sox beat the Red Sox. That was 8-4. Diamondbacks beat the Cubs 3-2 in extra innings. And in the blowout of the season, probably, I saw that the Reds beat the Orioles. Take a guess on that score.
Wasn't it 25 or something?
24-2.
That's a number.
Ouch.
I bet they ended the game without a pitcher pitching.
Ouch.
Yeah, that's...
I don't think I've seen that kind of blowout before, at least not in the regular season.
Well, the Cubs won a game on Saturday, or was it Friday, where the other team, the Diamondbacks, scored 10 runs in one inning. The last time the Cubs won a game where they gave up 10 runs in one inning was 1912.
Yeah, shouldn't be giving up 10 runs in an inning.
No.
Who did that?
A couple guys came in.
How many people did that?
Well, one guy came in and gave up 6 runs without getting an out.
Also, you know, in our degeneracy, we've now listed the Pope odds on Polymarket. So,
you got to be kidding me.
So the recent, there's already $2 million bet on the next Pope, and it's Luis Antonio Tagle, I don't know. But he seems to be the favorite on Polymarket. I didn't check Kelce, but there's two front runners. One is Luis Antonio Tagle, and the
Where's
other
he from?
Is Pietro Parolin, and that's 36. It looks like...
It's a two-horse race?
It looks like it's a two-horse race right now, and there's also bets on what continent the next Pope will be from. The one is Asia, and the other is Europe.
Well, you know, you don't have to be a priest to be Pope. Is there any chance for Mr. Murphy?
Maybe.
What do you think? You get some pretty good digs over there, Mike, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
You get the summer house, you get everything.
The food would be good, too.
Plus, you get the escape. Isn't there a tunnel that runs from the Vatican to the summer house or something?
No, it runs from the Vatican to Castel San Angelo. So.
Have you been there?
I haven't. Oh, I've been to Rome, and, you know, it's Sistine Chapel and all that stuff. But
they're pretty cool?
Oh, yeah. It's beautiful. The amount of art in some of the halls of the Vatican is unbelievable.
Did you get to see a lot of that, or was that because you were in the Army, you got a better tour, or are you just a regular schmuck taking a tour?
No, it's just a regular schmuck. They do regular tours there. Just have to wait in line forever, that's all.
I imagine Mr. Flanagan's probably been in there to see the Pope. You know, he's that kind of guy.
I saw the Pope in Grant Park.
Wasn't this guy. What was this guy?
No, not this one. That was John Paul II when he came to Chicago.
Yeah, there was a lot of people there for that thing, as I recall.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was three blocks away.
God.
Huge crowd.
What, we have the Bodius, as they say in the South Side. What do you make of, you see what's happening in the market. You see what some people's predictions are for the economy. They're not all the same, of course. They never are. That's what makes a trade. What would your view be? And John, as you probably were listening in, we're talking about money in college sports. If you're going to buy a team, if you had that kind of scratcho, or you were going to, you know, give somebody a 6-year contract, or even a college kid, a 4-year contract. Well, I guess they're going to be five now, right? What do you think the world's going to look like 3 years from now? Are ticket prices still going to be going up, or are they going to be going down, and nobody's going to afford them? Or everything's going to be swimmingly better, and, you know, an $8 million contract today is going to be a bargain 3 years from now. What's your guys' view of all this stuff taken together if you were writing that check? Why don't you go first, John?
I think it's going to be a market decline in college sports. I just don't see that as adding to its audience. Once they start to, you know, look more and more like the pros, I think there's not enough pull among alumni and students and everything else to keep that kind of enthusiasm going. I think it's going to make it look as crass as pro sports have become. And that was one thing that college sports always had as an advantage, I think, for its audience, that it had, you know, more immediacy to from the players to the people, and, you know, it didn't reek of money the way it does now. So I see it just, you know, it's going to dilute its impact and attractiveness. What do you think, Mike?
Yeah, Mike. Plus, Mike, give us a number if you think it goes full pro. How many colleges do you think go that way?
I don't. I just think you'll end up with perhaps three conferences. You're going to have the SEC, you're going to have the Big Ten, and maybe the ACC if somehow they survive. But just as John said, you know, you're going to see people falling away from the college sports because they are too pro. But you have dedicated fans to certain colleges, and I don't know if that's ever going to go away. So who knows? And I think Notre Dame eventually will be forced into joining a conference. I mean, essentially they're in the ACC, but in football they're going to have to probably go to the ACC also. But who knows?
Well, but even if you're in the conference, I don't see Pittsburgh having the stomach to compete with Alabama, do you, money-wise or even moral-wise?
Well, some of the state schools, I think they'll be able to compete. You know, Illinois, well, and Pitt's a state school, so who knows, Tom?
Well, that's kind of, you guys, you know, you're not regular schmucks. You've been around the block. You've been around sports your whole life. I mean, this is the part that intrigues me. If somebody runs into the, you know, the Maryland Board of Directors meeting, and the three of us somehow are on the board, you have to be a low-paying board if they wanted us, huh? If somebody runs in, well, this is what we have to do to compete with, like, Auburn in football. What do you think people look at each other and go, we're not doing that? Or do you say, if that's what we got to do, that's what we're going to do? What do you think the response is? I mean, Maryland's never done that. Neither is Rutgers or some of those schools. This is what we got to do, pound, pound, pound. I mean, the guys are going to say, what do you mean we got it? We don't got to do anything. I mean, I just don't know what the response is. I constantly, what do you guys think?
Well, I think, you know, some schools are able to compete in different areas, like UCLA. I mean, they had a decent basketball team this year. Their track and field is probably good. Their volleyball's good. Water polo, you know, Notre Dame, although these aren't money sports, but at least they're competitive in certain things. I mean, Notre Dame with the fencing, lacrosse, soccer is pretty decent, women's soccer anyways. So who knows what's going to happen, but there's no money in those sports, so it much remains to be seen. So I just don't have a good feeling about college sports now. I think it's going to go downhill from now.
Well, just go ahead, John.
I think Title IX, you know, is just going to have to demand more and more money to spread around. If you want to have any kind of sports programs, they have to be gender neutral, whether they make money or not. And the ones that don't make money are going to have to be, you know, finding funding from sources that colleges are finding harder to get. You know, there's all sorts of shakeout in the future of enrollment and the job market that I think the universities have been not very quick on the draw to keep up with. And it'll be tough enough for them to raise, you know, enrollment to a level where they can sustain the operation they have without college sports. If you add sports to the mixture, it will probably, you know, isolate a few universities with, you know, unlimited, you know, money sources, but that's going to be a vast minority of higher ed. I think you're going to see a lot of small colleges closing. It's already happening. You're going to see consolidation. I just don't see that they can draw up the students and keep their funding levels if they have to deal with a sports program that's taking more and more money out of their monthly nut. So I think it's just going to, you know, shake out a lot of places that are going to have to concentrate on something else if they want to keep afloat.
What if I'm just asking stupid questions? Allegedly, the football team used to cover all this stuff. Now, when they start paying everybody and stuff, they might not even make money. I mean, maybe they will, maybe they won't. If I'm going to Notre Dame or Northwestern or someplace, they want me to pony up $80,000 or thereabouts, and I've got, you know, 500 other schmucks, women and schmucks and schmuckettes on scholarship to pay all these other sports. Why in God's name do I want to pay for that? Why do I care if we have a women's fencing team or a guy's lacrosse team or something? I'm not playing. Why should my tuition go so those guys can go free for what? A sport they don't make any money at?
Yeah, that's kind of the way I see it playing out.
I mean, if you got the cover of the football team covers all that stuff, I guess that's always been the story, right, Mike? I don't know.
I think it is partially, Tom, but I, the fencing team might have their own separate source, you know.
Maybe, yeah.
And maybe hockey does too. There's just too much going on at, like, let's say for, well, at Notre Dame, that I'm sure that most of those sports are paying for themselves.
I'll take the under on that. You think the women? Yeah. You think the volleyball team that plays to no crowd, that they now have to fly from San Francisco to New Jersey to play Rutgers? You think those guys are making a dime? I'll take the under.
Yeah, well, you're probably right about that. But you know, somewhere they're going to find the money to keep, as John just said about the Title IX stuff. They've got to take care of the women also. So.
But yeah, I think that's the way the dodo bird. They're gonna separate out the revenue sports and the other stuff. I think. I mean, the Title IX, does anybody care about that anymore?
Well, I think they do, but who knows? You know, I don't know that.
Yeah, I don't know either. I mean, that's what I'm saying. When you start, it'd be interesting to see where that goes. I guess is the question. So Mike, when and if do you think we'll let you go? Talk about some markets here. When and if do you think the Defense Department's going to have some of the same? Is it going to come under construction? Are we going to go down in the number of aircraft carriers? I mean, what are we doing? Do you have any idea what's going on there?
No, I don't. I was starting to read an article earlier today where the Pentagon's in chaos. So, and it was. The source of the article was a friend of Hegseth, so who knows what's going on, you know, because you just can't there's too much long-term thinking that needs to go into the Department of Defense, and I think right now they're just in react mode to all the nonsense that's going on. But at least, Trump is trying to get peace in certain areas, although it's not working with Russia and Ukraine, and it's not working with Hamas and Israel. So who knows what's going to happen?
Yeah, I don't know. That's all pretty much blown up again, hasn't it?
Yeah, it certainly has. But, the Ukrainians accused, Putin says he's willing to have a ceasefire, and then he continues bombing. And the ceasefire with the Russians is just a way to stall. They just want to kind of keep gradually getting territory, although I think the Ukrainians will do better now that they have some aircraft supporting them, and hopefully they have some pilots trained by now.
Well, if it turns out, it's hard to read somebody's personality, especially our president, but if it turns out that neither side's going to pay attention to him when he said 100 times anybody can make a deal, it's the easiest deal ever made, and he can't do it, what do you think he does?
Yeah, I don't know, because they're talking about giving up, at least at this point, and I hope he continues to pressure them, but who knows with him? He's got a short attention span, so I don't know.
What last question? The Iranians, and maybe John on this. They seem like they're wounded everywhere. I mean, they obviously, the guys in Syria are toast, although. I haven't really heard much about the new guy. What's he doing over there? Even Lou hasn't talked about it. Have you seen? He's kind of a unknown. Do you have any idea where he's landing? He's not cozied up to the Iranians, I don't think. But the Houthis are getting their ass kicked. The guys who else lost over there? Not just Syria, it was Lebanon too, right? So I mean, they're at the table. I don't see them agreeing to drop their nuclear weapons stuff. But what else can? What do they bring to the table other than that at this point? Do you have any idea?
No, I don't. I think Syria is ungoverned space at this point. Lebanon is kind of that way, although Hezbollah has a lot of control of that. But, we're kind of decimating, or the Israelis are decimating Hezbollah now, too. And but the Syria situation, that's probably just, as I said, ungoverned space.
Well, the one guy supposedly took over, right? At least he kicked out.
Yeah, but he only controls, I think, a limited amount of space. I don't think he controls the whole country.
So he hasn't been continuing to make advances. That's a part I haven't heard of. I haven't heard boo about it for 4 months. I guess that's what I'm asking you about.
And I haven't seen Boo on it either, Tom. So
it's amazing,
I don't know.
It's amazing how this stuff drops off the front page, isn't it?
Well, if it's not hot news, it goes away, you know.
If it doesn't bleed, it doesn't lead, as they say.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Well, Mike, have a good one. I hope you had a good Easter, and we'll talk about you soon. We'll try and talk a bit more about this defense stuff when something comes out. You'll be even have you on with Lou or something. But have fun today. Go do something good, and I'll talk to John about politics and the markets there. How boring will that be?
Okay. All right.
Take care, Mike.
All right. Take care, John.
John, hope you had a good Easter.
I did, Tom. How about you?
Yeah, it was okay. I mean, I've got a friend that's not doing well. I'll say she's not doing so well. She's in hospice, a cousin, and so it's kind of dealing with that this weekend. And Aud's a champion. I mean, she's doing whatever she can, everything she can for the lady, and she got nobody else. I mean, there's no her husband died a couple months ago, so Aud and a friend who lives on the block have been doing the Lions' work. They've got a hospice group that's fantastic, and whatever, it's make the best of whatever the crap situation you're in, right? Isn't that our lot as humans?
Yes.
Do the best you can with what you're working with, basically.
God bless squad report.
Yeah, I mean, she does. So I was on dog duty and so forth, which is fine. Of course, the one dog totally ignores me. She's Audrey's dog. The little one wants to be right by me. So even dogs have personalities and who they like and who they don't like. But what do you make of market action here? I mean, how much can people say, and, I talked to some Trumpers over the weekend, how much can they seem to ignore some of people's criticism of what's going on and just say, don't worry, it'll all come out, this guy's got it all figured out. Even if I'm one of those guys, I got to be questioning it right now. Too many things happening all the way. Even people that are certainly for it and want to bring stuff back here, have to believe that the on again off again of this stuff is not causing anybody to do that. I mean, I think I can make that statement, and both sides would have to agree with me. Don't you, or maybe not?
I think it's there's many ways to spin it, and I think it's also I think that traditionally there's been a desire to tip the market to influence perceptions and political outcomes. So Obama benefited coming into office from a downturn to make it look like there was a situation that needed remedying, and he was a better shot to do that than John McCain. So there's always forces to tip the balance in favor or against a political faction, and sometimes I think they become uppermost in the market. And I'm not saying necessarily that's what we've got now, but it wouldn't surprise me if we did. That with all of the stuff behind the scenes with the judiciary and the immigrant repatriation and the Democrats in total disarray, I think one thing they could have in their favor is that the markets look so destabilized that it's just another way of distracting Trump the way they did in his first term. So some of this I think has to be taken with a couple of grains of salt. It isn't just a response to Trump the way people would like to spin it. It may be a deliberate way to steer public opinion against Trump.
Well, I don't think you have to worry. I don't think the public needs any encouragement to not like the guy at this point.
Well, but his approval rate's not. I mean, I don't think Trump has much to worry about when it comes to the issues that he's ran on. His numbers on those are stronger.
He's gonna have a. Sometimes I don't like to accuse anybody of anything, but some of my MAGA friends, I have to say, you got to get the picture of Kamala Harris off your desk. That no matter what the guy does, you look at that picture. It's like the kingfish looking at the picture of his wife or something. In Amos and Andy. I mean, you look at that and say, no matter what the guy does, can't be as bad as her being in there, and then you follow behind. But it's kind of not what you. This thing with the State Department, anything that we do that promotes democracy and stuff overseas, we're cutting out. Does anybody really want to? I mean, that's been a 50-year deal we've been doing. Make that 75. Does anybody really want all this stuff? I mean, this guy's personal opinion. I mean, it's dictatorial, John. It absolutely, everybody you talk to that isn't an absolute mega sits there and goes, well, this stuff's happening, this isn't right. The one guy's opinion can't be shaping things. And all the stuff that people say, well, that's what you ran on. You ran on Donald Trump's gut and his brain. Boy, oh boy, that's a big stretch. Just saying.
The media has, you know, so discredited itself that you can't find a pro-Trump any sentence in, you know, selected, you know, big news media ever.
See, I don't think. Sorry,
it would be a set precedent moment if there was something positive uttered. The same thing with every television, you know, news network, one way or the other. So when there's no balance there, this is why, you know, people feel the need to become polarized, because when they turn on one station, their beliefs are insulted.
I never ever look at a media thing. I just look what the guy comes out with. He doesn't need media. You don't have somebody to tell me what he's thinking. He says it 25 times a day. Where's the media? You guys, honestly, you guys that keep bashing the media on this, listen to what's the other one? Fox and who the other guys that are, if that stuff isn't, you know, Heinrich Himmler, for God's sake, talking with Newsmax, every single sentence has to be something in there, has to be some dirty thing some Democrat done, or they'd be worse. I've never heard anything like it.
That's the reaction to what's, you know, been going on for a long time. The reason that things like Newsmax and One America, OAN, is because there is complete control of the narrative when it comes to the big media operations, the press and, you know, radio and television.
If the guy,
you wouldn't have a need for a news nation, and I'm not saying that's what I want to stake my, you know, political beliefs on. I think there should be outlets that say pretty much whatever they want. But I don't think any of them have any inside track on the truth.
Okay, but
it's because you cannot trust anything.
Why is this such a thing with, God, I hate to say it, with you guys? I never look at anybody. The only time I've ever listened to CNBC in my life is once in a while, I'll be in YouTube, and I'll see some headline from one of those guys, and I listen to it, and I go, these guys are idiots too. I never listen to either side. I just listen to what the guy's doing. I never
look. A lot of people listen to him, Tom, and don't see it the way you do. You know, I'm just saying that you're entitled to your belief, like the other people too.
I don't really care, John, what anybody does. All I'm saying is, actually, I do care. But the idea that it calls for the terminating offices and positions within the department focused on climate, women's issues, democracy, human rights, migration, and criminal justice. Did people really vote for that?
I think a lot of people did.
Okay, it's I don't.
It's following those that have taken us down a primrose path that we've paid terribly for. I mean, all these high flown ideals. And, you know, WHO and UN initiatives and, you know, all the BS, the hot air, but in the climate debate, that, you know, this became, you know, a religion of sorts. It had nothing to do with science anymore.
Well, I'll tell you what, it absolutely has to do with science in other countries. Anybody doesn't.
Yeah, but not science that's being sold in this country. It has nothing to do with controlling the climate except in this country. So, I mean, it isn't like we're striking a blow for.
Well, we're supposed to have a climate accord worldwide, which didn't work out. But of course not.
And this is why it's just been an insane path.
Well, the people in Brazil are changing the climate. The people in China have absolutely changed the climate.
And nothing we've done in this country in our climate initiatives or with, you know, the WHO or Paris Accords or anything does anything with China India. But why are we doing this?
But as you walk out your door today and actually can breathe in Chicago, you can't say that nothing we did climate-wise has ever changed anything in this country. It changes country dramatically.
Let's talk environment, not climate, because I think that's where the debate has gone completely off the rails.
Yeah, I don't. I'm all for
clean air. I'm all for, you know, recycling. I'm all for, you know, clean water. Those are environmental issues, and I think that's just smart management and stewardship. But when you get into this angle now that you know, everything has to be done because we're raising the temperature of the earth, and we've got to stop making automobiles that use fossil fuels, blah blah, you name it, in the name of improving the climate. Forget it, that's not science.
I would say that if you had a direction that over the next 100 years you would use other stuff rather than fossil fuels as time went by, when it became the time to do so, I don't have a problem with that. Forcing it on people, I'm with
right,
you.
Right, but legislating them out of existence, which is kind of what the climate crazies want, is no good. That's pointless.
Yeah,
right. We can't take a big enough, vantage point on the climate to make intelligent policy about everyday life. The climate is always changing. Temperatures are always rising.
I'm with you on that, but
we're falling somewhere in the world, and I just think it's illusory to think that if you legislate like this industry or this policy,
but where's the line? I mean, in the Chicago area, for people who don't, because we talked about it last week on Thursday. There's still a couple of coal plants in Illinois that use Illinois coal, which I don't know how the hell they're doing that, John, because Illinois coal is pretty high sulfur. There was that experiment. Maybe you can tell me. What was the story with that experimental plant here in Illinois? The idea was they were going to... Illinois coal is high sulfur. It's bituminous coal. I'm not a chemist. The coal you see going by in the unit trains to the plants east and south is coal from Wyoming. That's anthracite, right? I mean, it's way less... It doesn't burn as hot, but it's got way less sulfur, correct? Isn't that what we learned in high school? Somehow or another, there's two plants in Illinois that actually are burning Illinois coal. And I think they're doing it within reasonable pollution standards, I think. Also, there was supposed to be a small plant, John, that was going to find a way to put the sulfur underground, right? And all of a sudden the funding, and this was, I think, was under the Obama group, all of a sudden they pulled the funding like right away, didn't they, or something? Or was it Biden's people that did that? Somebody did.
I don't remember where this was or the intricacies of the deal.
It was like halfway downstate. It wasn't south-south.
Yeah.
But I don't think Trump did that. I think it was either Biden or Obama. Well, I mean, the thing was like ready to start, right? And then somebody yanked the funding?
This is my gripe. If you want intelligent energy policy, you don't... play like the worst schoolmarm and say no more of this, all of that. It's got to be either or. No, I'm all for experimenting and putting stuff together. Can we do this better than we're doing it? Not we're doing it all wrong, so we have to come up with a completely new blueprint and make impossible fuel standards the law.
Well, do you think there was any way? And I don't know the answer to this. There's any way you could have kept like the coal plant going in Pilsen? In a densely populated area.
Well, that's where that was the flagship, the Fisk Street plant for Commonwealth Edison on 27th Street. It just closed down not that long ago.
Well, and I know there was a number. Boy, talk about screwy stuff that you probably know more about than me. Did Commonwealth Edison find a way to sell those to people and then all of a sudden get on the side of environment or something? Because they wanted to use their new plants and not the old ones that they just sold them to guys? Wasn't there some screw up? And there was something real sleazy there, wasn't there?
Yeah. And, the thinking then, Tom, there was no, stigma attached to Commonwealth Edison or any power company burning, gazillions of tons of coal, because everybody in Chicago heated their house with coal, too. So this was not something that they felt any greater obligation to the environment than the average homeowner.
Can you still heat your house with coal?
Well, the only person I knew when I was growing up on the South Side who had a coal-fired boiler, the parents owned a coal company. The coal truck would come and fuel that house. I don't think that
you know who still has coal, still has a coal-fired furnace is who are the guys that make the bread on Grand Avenue?
Oh, the
tell us the name of the stuff. I can tell when I feel it
because
the, no. I can tell when you go to an Italian place, but I feel on the bread, I can tell you where it comes from. Those are the guys with the root. If you don't eat it by the end of dinner, it's like a weapon. It's a place on Grand. They got the great little bakery there. The stuff is delicious. They think they still got a coal-fired furnace for cooking the bread. But I don't think if they ever I don't think they could ever move. I think they're grandfathered in somehow. Anyway,
well, in this, you know, I remember, you know, we had oil fired hot water heating when I was growing up. So, but I think that's, you know, gradually, you know, gone the way.
Was that oil? The reason why I asked this question is because my grandmother had it. Was that oil burner in an old coal fired burner?
Yeah. Ours was a converted coal. You know,
how inefficient? How inefficient was that?
Oh yeah, well, and I mean the house still had all the old vents, you know, the intakes and the returns when it was a cold, you know, hot air gravity system.
For normal people that have no idea what the hell we're talking about, if you had an old coal-fired house, there was this big burner, furnace, boiler, whatever you want to call it, in the middle, and you fed the coal into it. And what people did when they got rid of coal, they wanted to convert, they converted to oil. And you put this monster tank, I don't know how many men and a dog it took to get the tank down there, even empty. Because getting them out was a big deal, remember? So you bring this huge tank down there, and they actually put oil burners in where the coal grates used to be. And you slam the door, and they had a starter in there of some kind, had a pilot light. And when you call for heat, the thing went on, and it was inside, so you didn't have to change any of the pipes running up to your radiators and stuff for the water. So the oil burner in there essentially took the place of the old coal grates. And actually, some of the schools I was in, John, they did the same thing with natural gas. They just put natural gas burners inside the old coal boiler.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not so sure how efficient that was, but... But the original...
Well, the big octopus plants, I mean, to get the piping out of that, people just said, the heck, we'll just, you know, reuse, you know, the fire pit of this thing.
Well, just as an educational thing, and we'll get back to what's going on in the world here. An educational thing, the original coal-fired schools in the city and coal-fired buildings, this was kind of before electricity in some of these places. Or before electricity was, not before it was invented, but... So all your pumps, the water and stuff going to the various places there in the building to heat the classrooms and everything, all those pumps were powered by steam. They weren't powered.
Yep.
And as time went by, if one pump kind of conked out, they'd put an electric pump where that one was, and then if something else. So at the end of maybe 30 years of this, I could walk into places and virtually all the old pumping mechanisms were taken over by electric pumps. And at that point, you could cut the pressure down on the steam and the boiler from, you know, 80 to like 2, because all you're doing is making heat. But when you're actually moving pumps, your steam pressure is 80 or 85, which is dangerous as hell. And if you get a steam leak, you put your hand in front of it, you cut it off, because you had to run steam. These are all steam pumps. They look like a locomotive room. I'll tell you what, yeah. John, it was fascinating to look at, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, that's we had my grade school. It was a coal-fired steam plant.
Wow.
And of course, steam was very, very efficient because it traveled so quickly. You got heat in every corner of the system pretty fast.
Oh yeah,
and it got boiling hot.
Well, it's unreal. So, I mean, what if this keeps going forward, John? I really wish much as it looks like all I'm doing is criticizing, a lot of stuff Trump is doing, I actually think kind of needs to happen. At some level, it needs and is not all that horrible of an idea. The pace and the changing your mind back and forth and the seemingly thin-skinned approach to it, I have a problem because I think even his good ideas aren't going to work because of him. And I find that hard to. I don't want that to happen because there's some good stuff that can happen here, in my opinion. And I think he's ruining it. I actually think manufacture here in a sober way, understanding what comparative advantages we've offered another country, bringing the things back here to where the marginal, well, how's this for a term, John, on Monday morning, where the marginal return to the labor provided is good enough to where we can pay people a decent wage. Now, I hope everybody knows what I just said, but I think we need to focus in on those kinds of industries. And if somebody else has, I'll use a comparative advantage in labor, meaning they got a gazillion more people than we do, and wants to work not slave labor, not politically oppressed stuff, those kinds of things. If they work for somewhat less there, that's okay, John. Everybody in the country, everybody in the world doesn't have to make the same amount. But as long as it's not, you know, slave or child or whatever, you're never going to have, you know, constant even money around the world, because some people have so much power that's cheap. Some people say, well, their machines are better, so the output of one person is going to be more than it is in another place. I think you need to have the freedom to let that happen properly. And between the people overseas being goofballs the way they do it, and the way we're now attacking them in ways that make kind of no sense, I don't see a positive solution here. I don't. Even though some of the ideas I think are pretty good. I mean, am I wrong or right?
The problem I think maybe you're having, and other people too, is the pace or the energy level behind this. And I think that's due to the experience of Trump in his first term, where I don't think he was prepared for what he was going to face in Washington. I don't think he appreciated, or anybody around him fully appreciated, the depth of the obstructionism that was at work to sabotage him at every corner.
Okay, but we're, and right. Go ahead. Coming into
this term, he has gone at it as, you know, as radically, you know, quick a way as you could probably want. But Tom, look at what's, you know, right behind this time-wise. You had an administrative conglomerate in the federal government that had gone really off on its own because there was nobody at the top controlling anything. So, and yet, you know, every bit of machinery in the media lying about the extent to which there had been a loss of control in the executive branch. I don't think we're ever going to understand fully the depth of the damage that did. Not just to people's credibility, but to the way the government had kind of spiraled into some sort of even a more monstrous situation that we've seen.
I think if you look at, like I did, you know, and this is the part that kind of frosts me a tad. I actually went back and looked. The amount of people hired in the last 32 years, 16 of which were Republican, 16 were Democrat, has been almost the same under each person's watch. And to turn around and say that it's all Democrat is just wrong. It's just wrong.
I'm not saying anything about the hiring. I'm talking about the way the government is run.
What are you talking about? You think Trump's term or Bush's terms were efficient?
Do I think his terms what?
Do you think those terms were, everything was efficiently run and all of a sudden it wasn't?
No, far from it. I'm saying that the mess until, you know, Inauguration Day in Washington, the biggest problem for me wasn't necessarily how many people, you know, departments so-and-so had on its, you know, payroll that weren't doing anything, but it was the fact that
how do you know they weren't doing anything?
I'm not saying they were or weren't. I'm just saying nobody was minding the store at all.
What makes you think that
there were no cabinet meetings, there was no coordination, the messaging was just harping on the same, you know, everything is fine here, Biden is as sharp as a tack, blah, blah, blah. Nothing was getting done in a
what makes you think that the people in the transportation area and the human services area and the veterans area, what do you think that secretary went to work every day and didn't do anything? Somebody ran all those places.
I don't think Pete Buttigieg did very much.
How do you know?
I don't know what he did.
What
price did he pay? Whether he did any something or not?
What did Elena Cho do when she was there?
The labor secretary?
No. Who was the transportation secretary? She was that too, wasn't she? In another administration?
Well, I think all of these people had, you know, minimal, you know, skill levels for the jobs they had. That's been the case for a long time. I'm just saying that there was no supervision of any of these people.
How do you know?
Well, do you think Biden was calling them in and reprimanding them?
I'm saying how much if I put you into a job at the head of veterans, I put you and Lou in there, and all of a sudden I'm sick for 2 years and I don't tell anybody about it, what makes me think that you're still not doing your job?
That's kind of like what we had in the Defense Department, I think.
Well, I mean, that's a leap. I mean, nobody knows any of these things. People believe.
Maybe you had a defense secretary who was AOL, and, you know, didn't even bother to call the president. The president didn't know anything about it.
That was 3 days.
I'm just saying that kind of thing was rampant under Biden. I'm sure it was.
If you believe everything, Why does everybody believe stuff from one side, not believe, when both sides do nothing but lie? Why don't you?
But Tom, do you believe Biden had his finger on anybody's pulse? He didn't even have a pulse himself.
For you to extend that down to nobody did their job, I think is wrong.
I'm saying Biden didn't do a job. Period.
What? How long?
And as a result, nobody around him had any bigger job than to protect him from scrutiny or calumny or anything else.
Pete Buttigieg couldn't look at any road project and come up with a recommendation because all he was doing was covering from Biden.
I'm saying they didn't have any consequences to pay whether they did it right or wrong. Nobody's going to fire them.
Okay. I mean, I guess
Biden was going to fire anybody?
We're having an argument there's no end to, because nobody knows.
Tom, it was four years of that, and it was entrenched in the way things were being run. We don't yet know the price we paid.
How many people forget that right before them there was a guy named Trump that did a horse bleep job? What did he do when he was in there?
Because he was being assaulted at every corner.
Okay, if they didn't pick on him.
The administrative holdout
How did Clinton manage to streamline government the way he did when they were picking on him, too? Do you think they picked on Trump any more than Clinton?
Well, Trump didn't have the support of the Democrats like Clinton did. Certainly not in his first term. He didn't have friends anywhere, Tom.
I get it. I mean, I go through this all the time, that every single thing that's wrong with him is because people picking at him. Every ridiculously dumb idea he comes out with.
But I'm saying everybody in the Washington administrative state wanted no part of Trump and would do everything they could to create either the perception that he was failing or to make sure he failed.
Stop talking about the market. But forget the part that when Obama came in, who was the old white guy that said the only thing I'm going to do is try and get you out of here. What was that? Who was that? McConnell just quit. How cool was that, John?
Well, there was a groundswell of support for Obama. He played the victim to get elected, so you know.
I'm not happy with the way Washington has gone either way. I mean, I don't understand why I could launch, you know, forever, which I don't want to do this minute. I could launch forever in why people allow senators and representatives to behave wrongly if it reflects on them. I mean, I tell you what, people on the trading floor did not let people be crooks because it reflected back on them. Why people in Congress that are straight allow other people to screw up and don't have the balls to tell them to stop, I have no idea. But it's clearly both sides of the aisle. It's wrecked the government to a huge extent of people's impression of who's supposed to be doing what out there. It's totally screwed up whatever constitution we might have had, in my opinion. Why does somebody who's straight allow themselves to get tired with the same brush as somebody who's crooked? I don't get that. I came from an institution for 20 years, which I love, because people didn't allow that to happen.
One of the biggest casualties for me, Tom, is that it sort of enabled people to think that the government doesn't require a strong executive to direct policy.
Meaning a dictator.
Not a dictator. I'm just saying somebody who actually, you know, gets in front of the press every day and talks.
Well, let's talk about whether he should be our moral compass.
We don't even know what a strong executive looks like anymore.
Let's look at the two people from Illinois who I actually think are straight, Duckworth and Durbin.
No, they're not that straight.
They're Democrats, so you could never
want... That's straight enough for me,
they could never be straight because they're Democrats. And then they got to be idiots, I know, because they're Democrats. Roll with me for a second.
I didn't say that, though.
The implication is there. Now, the point is, they've never been accused of trading. They've never been accused of having an expressway exit at their place like Denny Hassert. Why do they put up with this crap where other people are doing it? I don't get it.
Well, they're part of the protection brackets, clearly.
No, there's something about it being collegial and the other people
That's the Senate, Tom. I mean, the Senate is a bad example
But there's a body. Well, do you think Jan, I've never seen the abuse of front running as I've seen in the last, since January, with this group in there. I don't know who to accuse. I see it every day. And I looked at who was doing all the trading. Out of the top 10, there's five Republicans, five Democrats. They're full-time traders. What are they even doing in Congress? Tommy Tuberville, Bill, went from a football coach to a senator to a trader in office. I mean, what's with that guy? Yeah, nobody seems to call anybody out on any of this stuff. But the thing of it is, I don't necessarily care, except for the fact that you talk to young people and they think they're all crooks, that we have no government. That's not right either. It's going. I mean, you and I arguing about one side or the other is not the issue. It's the fact that most people have lost respect for what we as a country, I think, are. We've had crooks before, but not to the point where every. But there always was a. For every crook, there was a Dan Inouye. I mean, for every crook, there was somebody who was above reproach. Now, can anybody name one person above reproach? I can't. That I know of. I mean, I don't know half these people. Anyway, we got Nancy coming in.
You won't find me defending Democrats or Republicans in the Senate as a body. They're all there to protect their own interests. They're all there to get reelected to the next cushy term.
I don't think it's. I think somewhat. It's not just collegial, Jen. It's not just like being on a board together. They're respectful for the fact that the people in somebody else's area elected the guy, and he's there. I mean. I got to believe if you elect the biggest crook, they still treat him like he belongs in the place because he was elected in, right? I mean, anyway, S&P futures down 55. We go back a little bit. NASDAQ futures down 251. We were down 70 a few minutes ago. We'll be right back. A quick Kraftwerk Weather Sports, and then we'll have Nancy and Jen.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
Welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm talking about Greg Pappas on the board. S&P futures down 60. We were down almost 80. We were down 80 really for a second. NASDAQ futures down 265, so we're kind of heading south here. Dow futures down 389. Individual stocks in the Dow. Goldman Sachs down 5.5. We got JP Morgan down 3. Salesforce down 4. NVIDIA down 330. Those guys are 98.20. They're kind of, I won't say appreciably, but they're under 100 by a little bit here this morning. I don't know that I expected that. Apple down another $5, $4.98, $1.92. Again, those are two huge amounts of shares outstanding there. That's massive amounts of wealth being lost, or at least for the moment. We could close up, of course. Over in Europe, DAX down 105.4%. These guys are down more than the European Central Bank cut interest rates, which Trump is trying to get Powell to do. Don't know if that's going to really help much, but anyway, he's trying to get Powell to do it, and he might. FTSE unchanged. Matter of fact, up 6 cents, so unchanged. CAC around down 44.6%. In Asia, we've only got Nikkei's trading down. They're down 451.3%. Hang Seng did not trade. They haven't traded since 417. Shanghai is trading. They're up 14.4%, which is they kept their benchmark lending rate steady. So I don't know. Friday was an inside day. Before the that was down 527. It was all. Which one was that? It was the United Health. They were down like 100 and some bucks on their earnings, which is a good thing we didn't do anything in there. S&P futures up 7. NASDAQ futures down 20. Again, that was Friday. Bonds with a big move to the upside here, up 7 basis points, 4.39. The Bund up 2.48. Japan up 1.29. Oil, whack, whack, whack. We got to get Greg to talk a second about the crack spread here. Oil down 160, 63.08. Brent down 155, 66.41. Natural gas down 5 cents, 3.19. Remember, it was $4 not that long ago, so 3.19, it's a big move. RBOB down 3.6 to 206, but still, RBOB at 206 is pretty high for oil being at 63. Gold with a big move up $84 now, 34.12. Busted through 3,400 here like dinner through a goose, for God's sake. Silver up 47 cents, 32.97. Copper up 3 cents, 4.77. Foreign exchange, dollar down again as the euro is 115. Again, it's, I don't think I've ever seen a move that fast in a really, really long time. British pound 133.8. So they're both dollars weaker again today. We got crypto up 2,600, 87,278. Quick traffic, weather, sports. Cubs lose late after being there for all day. Two rain delays. Ugh.
Morning, everyone. It is 7:36 here in Chicago. We've got cloudy, windy. We're on the high today, 58 degrees. Phoenix, about 61 right now. High of 91 today. Traffic, 26 minutes in from Montrose. Lake Cook to 290 is 43 minutes. Eisenhower, Wolf to the interchange, 34 minutes. Dan Ryan from 95th in is 30 minutes, and the Stevenson from 294 to the Rhine is 24 minutes. MLB, White Sox beat the Red Sox, that was 8-4. Diamondbacks beat the Cubs, that was 3-2, extra innings. And then the Reds beat the Orioles, that was 24-2. Yikes. That's all I got, Chief.
Quick question. Why explain to me, Lucy, why did we trade Jimmy Butler? I say we the Bulls.
Why did we trade him, or why did Miami trade him?
Well, he left here first. Tom Thibodeau's who made him a player, right?
Yeah, he was the man, and he wanted bigger and better things, and a coach that wouldn't run him, you know, 40 minutes a game, and decided to go more money, more star power, and then, you know, he did it again. So,
well, that guy in Golden State, they might be the first team that actually wins from the bottom bracket, one of the top teams. I mean, he's that good.
They've got the horsepower.
Yeah, well, maybe. Those other guys, boy, they got some big guys on that Houston team. Anyway, do we have Nance?
We do.
How are you? We have Nance and John. Interest rates all over the block. Nance, do you have to check your computer like every 20 minutes to find out what the rate is or what?
Pretty much. You know how those days go.
How volatile has it been in the last 3-4 weeks?
Very, very volatile. I mean, it's just like the stock market. Everybody feels violated lately. It doesn't matter what.
What's the mechanism if John, you know, he's got all this scratch, he wants to come in and buy a third house or fourth house, he runs in, he says, get me a rate, and you give him a rate, and all of a sudden, before he even walks out of the place, it changes. Can he get the first rate, or how long can you lock somebody in?
You can lock them. You can't give them a rate and then have them leave the scene and expect to get the same rate 20 minutes late. I mean, it just might not happen. The same as just like the market. So,
when's the last time you saw something like this? Or is it common? Is it somewhat common?
It's usually a rate can hold. You know, when we were in that 2 and 3 range of rates, that was pretty, you know, it stayed relatively somewhere in that range, but lately, I mean, the rates are just all over the place.
Does anybody, I mean, how does, if it really moves against the institution, do they try and weasel out, or
who's we?
Well, they. I mean, if you lock in a rate at 6 and the guy wants to close 6 weeks from now and the rate's like 9, does anybody try?
No. If you're locked, you're locked. If you don't lock, then you float. And if you float, you're volatile to all this.
Well, do you lock after you sign the contract, or do you lock after you?
No, I lock as soon as they tell me that it's a go. I lock it right then and there, and then I send them the. Then it takes, you know, an hour or so to get the stuff, the docs all ready, and then you send them out.
And how long do they have to find a place?
Oh, no, you have to have a place. It has to be tied to an address when you lock it.
Oh, okay, all right. That's what I was asking.
Yeah, it has to be tied to a place when you lock it. So they do have programs where you can lock, you know, buy in a zip code and lock it for a year, but that's usually done when you're, I mean, that's much more speculative, and you have to pay money up front to lock it like that.
I think that's
when
what
it's
Kenny
tied to a property, you don't have to do anything. You just tell me that's what you want to do, and I lock it.
I think that's what Kenny Polcari did. He when he was looking for his place, he paid to lock in the rate, and then he went looking. You know, he went looking hard. I mean, it wasn't like he was wandering around. But he wanted the rate before he said yes to the price of the house.
Yeah. So.
What would that cost him, do you think?
It can cost like 1% up front.
Really?
1% of the loan amount. Yeah. And then, I mean, it goes towards the price of the home, but you. Here's the thing, if you don't find anything, you don't get your, you know, that money doesn't go back to you. So,
okay. So Nance, we have to call John out here. He's lost all excuses. So this weekend he found himself in the Rolls-Royce dealership and he drove home a car.
Yeah.
You bought a Rolls-Royce?
No.
Oh,
I leased a Chevy.
you leased a Chevy. Okay.
A Chevy Mon? You leased a Chevy Mon? But John, do you still have to pay a lease tax in Chicago?
Oh yeah.
Really?
Now, why did you lease over buy?
Well, I just don't drive very much. For one thing, Nancy, I have very very few places to drive to. I don't need it for work. It's really just for errands. So, and if I don't like it, I could you know turn it back after 3 years and get another one, or buy it at that time if I feel up to it. So,
then if you bought a car and you didn't like it next week, you get rid of it.
Oh God!
Well, there is a learning curve. You know.
So, what did you get?
I got a Chevy Trax, so small SUV. So I'm very happy with it. Very happy.
I see.
It actually sounds nice.
Did you look at any of the hybrids or the?
I didn't really. I mean, my brother has a hybrid, and I mean, they've stopped making his hybrid, but. There's issues with the battery replacement and just, you know, plugging it in, paying for electricity. I just thought that I like the old fast fossil fueled ones.
Well, you know,
it's only a three cylinder car, so I think it's got some. I've never driven a three cylinder car before.
You don't have the mouse running around in the mazing and running around the turning it?
Right.
So the Trax is only three cylinders?
Yeah.
Never heard of that.
Don't some.
It's completely redesigned like 2 years ago. Body, engine, everything. Right? And it doesn't drive like a three cylinder car, I'll say that.
Yeah, some of these new vehicles, if you get a full size pickup truck now, you know, it used to be the six and two eights. Mm-hmm. Now there's the 1.8, and there's a 4. And it has, Jan, what's your transmission, like 6-speed?
6-speed, yeah.
Yeah, and it's all the engineering is going into the transmission.
Yeah.
It's wild.
Huh?
It's there was a reason why I asked you, Jan, about the lease, is there used to be General Motors, because I did this. I did this twice, actually. I forget the name of the program, though. It was, for those that aren't privy to this, I'll be real fast. The lease, there's three numbers. The price of the car, the estimate at the end of 3 years or 4 years or whatever, what the car is going to be worth, then there's the financing rate, like Nance always is talking about. Once you have those three numbers, you can do the calculation. Easy peasy. Problem is, in Chicago, there's a tax on lease things, including cars. So when you, at the end of your term of your lease, there's a residual value of the car, which you can borrow, you can purchase the car, correct, John?
Yeah.
Well, General Motors also had a plan, which I took advantage of twice. But now you, the advantage to what John just did, you have to pay the lease tax in Chicago. That's a But the good news is, you actually only have to pay sales tax on the part of the car you use. So if John's car is worth 50, and the residual value at the end of 3 years is 30, he only has paid tax on the 20, correct, John?
Yeah.
Well, General Motors had this other plan for stiffs that lived in Chicago, like me at the time, where it was the flip side of that. I actually bought the truck, and then there was a payment for 3 years. And if I wanted to, I could kick it back to them, and they had to buy it from me. So it's the opposite of me buying it from them. They had to buy it from me. So it's just a mirror image. The only difference being, I didn't have to pay the lease tax, but now I had to pay tax on the full price of the vehicle. And I still was ahead with the lease tax, but not by much.
Yeah.
So the trick is, like for a guy like John, who's probably not going to use very much, or for me, who kept it in pretty good shape, and I didn't use it very much back then either. The trick is, for John's car, which is be worth $25,000, say when he's done, for it to actually be worth $30,000 because he didn't use it very much, to then buy it at $25,000 and sell it at $30,000 or just keep it. Same thing with me. I sold it for more than I was going to say the price to give it back to them was $25,000. I have sold it both times for $30,000. So I actually made $5,000 in the end of the deal because I took good care of it. So there's it gets complicated, Jan, but it's yeah. the same as owning. What's the difference?
Yeah.
I mean, a lease, when you know the number you can buy it from, is the same as owning. So anyway, but try and tell that to Audrey, though. If I don't own it, it's not mine. You know, so there's some girl math gets involved there sometimes. Sorry, Nance. Just saying.
Sorry, Nance. It's okay, Tom.
Little girl. Anyway.
Nancy, I'm wondering, are you noticing any staffing issues with lenders or... the word was 6 months, a year ago, that they were, you know, losing people or laying people off just because, you know, there wasn't much inventory and there wasn't much action. Do you see, you know, them able to keep up with what's going on? Are they adding to staff from your perspective?
No, they are not. They're not. So, no. Mm-mm. There's not. It can get hectic. If all the loans come in, they all have to be closed in 30 days or less, then it can get very hectic. And they are keeping up. They are. It's just different now. I mean, everything, like I had a closing where part of it was at one title company and the other part was at another title company.
Uh-oh.
And yeah, and so the condo was at one title company, the garage was somewhere at a different title company. And the first title company was not well prepared. And the people actually left, went to the second closing. I stayed at the first closing, which normally I don't even go to closings, but I had a feeling that something would go wrong with this. And they came back from the second closing, and the first closing was just closing. It was crazy. So it just depends where you're at and where you go. I think it's a matter of whether or not you retained your, when they let people go, did they retain their better help? Does that make sense? And then the first title company, I think the people were more new and didn't really know how to handle. Like, the girl came back to the table not realizing I was the lender, and she said, it's all the lender's fault. It took this long. And I said, really? What happened? And she said, well, the lender was really picky. She said, they made us make these corrections that, you know, she said, could have gotten corrected, you know, so you could have left a long time ago. They could have gotten done after the fact. And I was like, really? I couldn't believe she said it like that. Like, it's okay. We closed it with a ton of mistakes in it, but it's all right. We could have figured it out all later.
Oh, God.
Okay.
And like, so finally, you want to throw a lot of business that way, don't you?
I finally told her who I was, and I said, you know, we can't do that. And she said, really? Why? And I said, because we have to deliver this loan the next day. We're on a time schedule. And she goes, well, can't you deliver the loan with mistakes? I said, no. It's not allowed.
That's unreal.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. So it depends on what help you retained. And the other title company, I mean, those people have been there a long time, probably as long as I have. We're all dinosaurs in that place. And they were in and out and back. And all I could do was apologize, and you know, you say, well, that's sometimes the way it goes. But when you're a purchase, we have our side has nothing to do, the buyer side has nothing to do with what title company they use. That's all picked by the seller's attorney, the seller's attorney. So
don't they get a kickback from all those places?
The attorneys do.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
That's why the seller's attorney gets to pick. It's just
they can write their title insurance through the attorney's title too. I mean they
right.
You know, getting a piece of the premium, so.
And that was the difference in the closing, is that the garage was bought separately from a different party. And the
was that on the same lot?
No, it was a condo. So
the garage is different. I get it.
Right, so it was different. It was just an odd thing, because if you buy the place, you want, in order to own the garage, you must own the condo first. So I was trying to work it out where the condo closed, and then we went to the second closing, and I just had this weird feeling like something could go wrong with this. So I went. And certainly that I did, because look at all the chaos we ensued upon.
Well, didn't Audrey, you helped her out with the one down here where she was a condo she sold, but she spent like three times as much time on the parking place than she did the condo, it seemed like.
That's the one. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. That is the one. So it just got very...
We talked to a couple of ladies here, you and Aud. Now, Aud, like I say, I stay out of her business. I don't want to screw it up, because I mean, she's so good at it, and you are as well. Everybody she does business with is seemingly somebody she did business with before, or a son or a daughter or a nephew or whatever that remembers she did a good job. And same thing with you. What if you were new starting in either one of your businesses right now? Would you be around if you started 5 years ago?
Probably not, because you need to build up the clientele, and it's, can you survive the lean times?
Are they,
like someone asked me yesterday, like, well, how are you surviving if it's so dead? And I said, you have to survive. That's just it. You have to know how to, you can't just act like there's nothing different. You have to readjust big time.
But Aud will get some people for both sides of the transaction. Well, if she has both sides, they're cash buyers both sides. I mean, it seems like a lot, not, I won't say the majority because I don't keep track, but that doesn't help you at all.
No, it does not. No. Just like she probably wouldn't have had the condo and definitely no one would have had the parking garage if it wasn't for me. Because I just told the client, you're insane buying this and not buying a parking spot. Let's go look at the parking spots. And then...
You guys actually went to look at parking spots?
Yes, we did. It's an experience, let me tell you. First time I've actually stood there and said, gee, what a variety of parking spots. But this particular client had bought already before downtown a condo with no parking spot, and it led to all kinds of chaos.
Well, how many people do you think the real estate and your industry has lost in the last 5-6 years?
Oh, time! It's got to be an amazing number. It's got to be an amazing number.
Well, you used to see real estate offices all over the place, and you don't anymore.
Yeah, I mean, typically when you have a client that buys something, you hope they stay there at least 7 to 10 years. I mean, that would be my thought, but. This particular client, this was the first property the client ever bought, was downtown without a parking space. And now he's back to buying downtown and didn't want to get a parking space. I said, did you forget what you went through the last time?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, it's
It's amazing to me how your mind can just erase all the things. It's just, you know, take an eraser.
Well, some of these buildings down here, and the one down in the loop right near us, they overestimated the amount of parking spaces. First of all, the places aren't full. And secondly, an awful lot of people don't have cars down here anymore.
That is correct. They don't. They really don't. So, just like John said, he pretty much gets around without using the car.
Yeah, but he just lost all his excuses now. When we say, why can't you come meet us? He's got to be there.
John, you're somehow getting into trouble in this. Have you figured that out?
I guess I just have to reinvent myself.
Well, he can't say it's not running. It's brand new.
Right. No excuses.
So he's got to come up with some new set of excuses. Oh, God, I ran over a nail last night. I got a flat tire. There's something along those lines. John, what's the state of the commercial market? Any change in the improvement there or no?
No. There's a conversion. I think it's the old Harris Bank building, the 111 West Monroe, which, you know, Harris had three properties on that block. This was their old, you know, like the beautiful sandstone building.
Yeah, a real nice looking, a nice looking one, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's now mixed use, you know, converting to, you know, rental, you know, apartments. I don't think condos, but rental, you know, apartments and commercial space. And the 79 West Monroe building, too, the old Bell Federal building, they've gotten approval, you know, the city program for that. There's just not enough of an appetite for apartments downtown these days, I don't think, to make that enough of a market to keep these buildings afloat. There's just, I can't see that many people wanting to live downtown now. This is because there's no amenities. I mean, there's no grocery shopping to speak of. There's very few places you can get a meal, to actually sit down and have a meal. There's no place really to shop except at a drugstore. So, everything is like working against the kind of appetite that, you know, you saw back in the 80s and the 90s of people wanting to live downtown, because there was a lot to do, and, you know, it was relatively safer than it had been, say, in the 60s and 70s. But it's tilted in the other direction now. I just don't see people ever, you know, vying for a space to rent downtown to live, unless you're pretty brave or got lots of money.
Well, it's a there's all kinds of, I mean, there's different markets. The late 70s, when I it was long gone from Pullman, when they got bought out and they canned me. After saving me to move me downtown, they canned me. But then I got brought back for three times my salary as a consultant, or an insultant, as we say in the South Side, Nance. But these guys moved here from Philadelphia for a while. They were, what was the name of the place? I'll think of it some. They were doing all this delay and disruption claim on the Amtrak stuff. So they're here in town. They wanted somebody on the inside, and Robin was still working there. So they wanted somebody working on the inside that they could trust. Robin goes, "Well, Tom's remodeling houses. He's the best guy there. Why don't you grab him?" So they did. These guys all lived in Lake Point Tower when it was rental, because Lake Point Tower had its own. The downtown, nobody was downtown. I mean, there were some on North Michigan, where the Pullman was, but not much. And the stores were still here. People still shopped. But they didn't want any part of the city. And Lake Point Tower is self-enclosed. Isn't there like a couple-acre park, and there's a food store and everything there, right?
Grocery store, yeah.
And so they all live there. And I used to get down there and play poker with these goofballs. You park downstairs. They still had the old meters where you put the pennies in. So I get there at 6:30. I put like three pennies, got me to 7. The entire Navy Pier was just dark. I mean, now it's this massive amusement center with all kinds of stuff going there. Can you imagine the place? You park down there. I was the only person there. My car was the only one down there. I'd go up and play poker with these knuckleheads, and they had all this money and all these apartments. And one guy was a. You know what Leica cameras are?
Oh, yeah.
They, I don't know if they still sell them. This guy must have had.
They do.
This guy must have had 100 of them, going back to God knows when. On every shelf in every room, there were like four or five like Leica cameras from the 20s and 30s and stuff, and they all looked like they were like a lot of money back then. I didn't touch them, but we'd play poker. And then I'd go downstairs and grab my car. But the city, there was nobody here at night. I mean, you would never even guess. Remember, State Street was the mall, right?
Yeah, for a time. I mean, the movie theaters, such as they were, you know, they showed every worst draw movie you could think of. So it was mobs of kids just, you know, roaming around looking for trouble at 10.
Yeah, but they weren't armed back then. They didn't shoot each other, at least.
No.
So, Nance, your business, there's still enough going on in the single family house stuff to keep everybody going, but who does, like, the, I mean, John's talking about the big stuff downtown. You're talking about houses. Who does, like, strip malls and stuff? Is that
banks?
Banks do all
the
that
banks
stuff?
Do, yeah, banks do strip malls and stuff like that.
But if somebody wants to list one of those, they don't typically call Audrey or you, do they?
No, they call commercial real estate people.
Even a real small strip mall is the commercial area, right?
Yes. Yes, sir.
Well, do you ever do any of that stuff? Any of those kind of...
No. No, I do not. You're on commercial, really probably the best deal is always to go to the bank, but then if you don't have great credit and all that other stuff, then you have to go to brokers and things of that nature. So,
are you still doing refis? And don't have to answer if you want.
Yeah, I did. I did a refi last week.
I mean, are they for credit card issues or?
No, the rates fell, and you know it was a you know 5-minute window where rates fell. Got and everything worked. Where I got a hold of the person and said, look, you could save this, and they said, well, why wouldn't I do it? And I said, really, there's no reason to, but. It's not one where you can think about it and hang up because the rate won't be there when you come back. So, you know, it's just a... So she took it. So it actually is going to work out for her.
So this is a person that, when a spike a couple of years ago, they got like a 7.5, and now you got them like a, what, 5 7/8 or what?
I think they were like a 7.875. You know, there were reasons they were that high. They were getting divorced, and there was a lot of debt, and things had gone wrong. And now she doesn't have any of that. Her credit score is back up. So the rates are down in the sixes. So,
oh, so you saved her. Good for you.
Yeah, you might as well save them. And I have those people on a list where, you know, like they didn't start out very good, but they have the potential. Like, you know, she did everything I asked her to improve her credit score. And I said, when they come down, I'll look at it. If I get it, if the opportunity rises, I will call you. And she was thrilled. She was like, you did what you said you were going to do. And I said, well, yeah, sometimes it's such a short window I can't even get to make the phone calls, but
well,
so
I mean,
it worked.
Well, that's why you and I get the repeat business. I mean, you go the extra yard. And that's, you know, that's what happens when people are successful at business. I mean, how about throwing out a phone number, a shameless plug?
My phone number is 708-341-9601, and I do answer my phone on nights and weekends, so that's helpful.
How late?
That's very helpful.
How late if I want to call you like at midnight or something?
Well, I'm still waiting for John to call me. I thought maybe he'd get the hand. You know, you
well,
never
now,
know.
Well, now that he's got the car.
Oh, yeah.
I'll just show up someday.
Yeah, what if he starts showing up three
well,
days a week?
He doesn't even know where I live.
There are ways. I guarantee you he can find out.
He knows people who know people, huh?
Right.
He's a big shot with all the title companies.
I'm going to give you the name of the title company that thought it was okay to just have tons
just
of estate.
Just give me the name of your subdivision, Nancy.
God. SP Futures down 57.
Southside, John. We don't have subdivisions.
SP Futures down 57. SP Futures down 260. Thank you, guys. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jackson. RIP Pope Francis. I liked him.
That's all, folks.